Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
The Irish Council for Civil Liberties has published a report this morning that is highly critical of the coroner service in Ireland. The authors are research fellow Gillian McNall and also Phil Scraton, Professor Emeritus at Queen's University Belfast and author of Hillsborough, The Truth. And Phil Scraton joins me now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for joining us. Your report is very stark, biased, overly influenced by Gardaí, inadequate and need of reform. They're just some of the things you say in your findings. Can you give us an overview of what you see is wrong with the way the coroner system operates in this country?
I think that one of the major problems that we face in understanding coroners is that most of us don't have any dealings with the coroner's court until that fateful day when perhaps we have to face the death of a loved one. And from the outset, the findings of our report demonstrate that people are marginalized, the bereaved feel marginalized, they don't gain access to sufficient information, there are inappropriate delays lasting a long period, up to years, until they come to the inquest. Across the island, the part-time nature of coroners means that quite often they turn up at a coroner's court and there's more than one inquest being held on that particular day. They have very little information. And even if they have legal representation, the problems of accessing information are severe. So what we are arguing for is a seven-point charter for the bereaved that actually commits the Irish government to understanding and fully providing for the needs of those who go forward to inquest, particularly those cases where the deaths are in controversial circumstances. I'm talking about prison or during arrest or in other similar kinds of situations, hospital deaths, for example, where there is contestation over perhaps negligence or poor care. The other elements of the report that is so significant are 52 recommendations. Now, I want to say one thing. It was 21 years ago, that there was a review held in Ireland of the coroner's service, which argued for a root and branch change. It was a service not fit for purpose, in facilities not fit for purpose. And since that time, there has been very minor modification of the service. The promised building and the new accommodation for pathologists and coroners was part built and then pulled down. And still, even in Dublin, at the heart of the coronial service, the facilities are inadequate and they're overworked, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But the point that's so important in this is that we can't now look at the system and say we can tinker with it or move it around at the edges. There has to be root and branch reform in terms of staffing, training, a full-time service. And more than anything else, we recommend the protection of the rights of the bereaved. It can happen to any of us at any time. And at the moment, the process is such that the rights of the bereaved take second place to the investigative process.
Yes, and I've spoken many times to people who have experienced inquests, and in the main, what I have found in my experience is they don't know what to expect. They
yeah.
feel that they haven't been told what the inquest is for, what the purpose of it is for, and the fact that the inquest cannot apportion blame. So when I speak to people who have been through the coronial service, they feel as though they're going into the unknown and they emerge blinking into the sunlight, not quite sure why that process happened or what the function of it was.
I think that that is a perfect summation of it, Claire. I mean, I think one of the biggest problems we face with inquest is exactly the point you make about whether or not it can apportion responsibility. Now, there are four elements to an inquest. Who was it who died? when did they die, where did they die? But the fourth is, how did they die? Now, we can't tell how a person died, tell the story of how a person died, without implicating those who might have had an involvement in that death. So it's a very difficult situation where we can't name individuals, but we can establish institutional practices that failed. So if I give you an example of my work on the Hillsborough inquests, which lasted for 2 years with a jury, in that situation, when we got to the end, the decision of the jury was that they had been unlawfully killed. All 96 had been unlawfully killed. But they couldn't say who killed unlawfully. Exactly as you point out, you can't apportion blame. Mm-hmm. But what they could do was add riders to their verdict, which demonstrated systemic failings, 15 in terms of policing, and then all the other authorities. So they weren't apportioning blame directly to an individual, but they were apportioning responsibility to the organizations. So if I was to take an example from our work in Ireland, I would say that in a situation where somebody has died in hospital and there is clear evidence that there could have been institutional negligence, you can't point the finger at a doctor or at a nurse or anybody else administering to the person who died. But you can say there were systemic failings in the process. You can establish that the duty of care that was afforded to that individual fell below that which would be considered to be good practice. So it's a very delicate relationship between actually apportioning direct responsibility to an individual, which it's not allowed to do, and apportioning responsibility to organizations and failures in systems. And that you are allowed to do. And you're allowed to do that in terms of adding riders to the verdict. That's the whole point of an inquest. We're supposed to be learning from what has happened so that it isn't repeated.
But I was interested Phil, to cut across you. I was just interested to see in your findings and in your analysis piece in The Examiner today, you make us aware of the fact that there's no system in place to make sure that inquest recommendations aimed at preventing recurrence of avoidable deaths are implemented. So we often hear a coroner will say, I recommend that improvements are made, for example, to this stretch of road. Now, you're saying today that there is nothing there to make sure that that happens.
That's absolutely correct. I can draw on a very current situation from outside of this jurisdiction where a coroner in Cambridge actually identified a pattern of deaths in a hospital regarding anorexia, deaths of young women, over a seven-year period. And what he identified was a failure in the system of treating each of those women. So they all died in individual circumstances. So this would apply to your analogy to a stretch of road. They all died in similar circumstances, but not at the same time. But what he could see was a pattern that had emerged in those deaths. And so he made an incredibly strong recommendation, which will have to be acted upon, to the hospitals, the hospital trust, and also to national government, regarding the treatment of young women in particular who suffer anorexia nervosa. Okay. Now, that is the perfect example of how a coroner should have the capacity to influence the future. And I think that's precisely, as you put it, it's exactly what we are aiming for here. Because the one thing that always has sticks in my mind, and I've cried many tears on reading these cases. But the one thing that sticks in my mind is when families generously say, I don't want this to happen to anybody else. That we have to listen to. If I was to choose a title for a book on families and bereavement and coroner's process, it would be that. I don't want this to happen to anyone else.
But because these recommendations...
That is an absolutely crucial issue. Yeah, that has to be embedded in the in our learning from these cases.
And you also say you're concerned about Gardaí who have close associations with local and part-time coroners. Now, will you explain that to us? Because I don't think most people will be aware that these issues exist.
Most coroners, they're part-time, and they depend on the investigation of a case on the local Gardaí. So what happens then is the guards will prepare the case, will support the coroner in developing the case, and they put the case forward. They're known to the coroner. They work with the coroner regularly. They live in the community. And particularly in rural communities, they all know each other. So what families then experience is when they come to court, they see the familiarity between the guards and the coroner and also the pathologist. So in that situation, they feel excluded, but they can also see that the investigation has been determined by series of assumptions about the death that are based on local knowledge. That is not impartial, distant investigation. So one of the major recommendations that we make, apart from a system of full-time coroners, not part-time coroners as they are now, across Ireland, but we are arguing that very strongly they should be supported not only by a secretarial and administrative staff, but by an investigative staff.
Phil, we asked the department.
Impartial, independent investigators who work with the coroner on any individual case. Because in some of these situations, the police are implicated. I don't mean that the Gardaí are implicated directly in the death, but they're implicated in the knowledge around the death and the people involved. That cannot be right.
We asked the Department of Justice for a comment on your report. Now, they have said to us that they haven't had sight of it, nor has it had any contact with the Irish Council for Civil Liberties in its preparation. They go on to say the department is not in a position to comment, but will review the report once available. So is that the case, that the Department of Justice here was not involved in the preparation of this report?
Yes, it's absolutely vital and fundamental to the research that we did take evidence, and it's there in the report, in the chapters from coroners and from GSOC and from other individuals directly involved, all anonymized, I might add. But the actual giving people sight of a report in advance, when it's a report that is based on coroner's inquests in terms of the bereaved families, we considered to be, or the ICCL considered to be, inappropriate.
Okay.
So there is now plenty of time for them to be able to read the full and detailed recommendations. And this, of course, plumbs into the current issues with another hat on that I've been involved with, which is the submissions around the mother and baby and Magdalene institutions. I was involved in that submission to the Irish government and very much involved in those cases. In
fact, on whose behalf? On whose behalf?
That is, the case in case involvement in the South is a group of academics across the South. In the North, it is on behalf of the Assembly, Northern Ireland Assembly. Okay. It's the research that is to develop a program of what should happen in the North regarding the future of investigation and the future of inquiries.
Okay. Phil,
that was established 5 weeks ago, and I'm one of the three investigators on that to make those recommendations.
Okay. Phil Scraton, we'll leave it there for now, but thank you very much indeed. We appreciate you talking to us. Professor Emeritus at the School of Law at Queen's University in Belfast. Now, the Juventus chairman says Super League can no longer go ahead. Andrea Agnelli says the league is no longer viable following the withdrawal of the six English clubs. We're going to talk about the short-lived Super League after this break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.